This is Grow in Grace, a daily teaching ministry of Palmetto Baptist Church. We face an incredible danger in our spiritual lives. The adversary, Satan, wants to destroy us. However, God sent a victorious champion to fight on our behalf, His Son, Jesus Christ. He's also given us a complete set of spiritual armor to defend against Satan's attacks and to advance against the kingdom of darkness. Today, we'll begin the final sermon in the series, Winning the War for Your Soul, titled Battlefield Praying. Pastor Sam will be preaching from Ephesians chapter 6, verses 18 through 20. Let's listen together so we can grow in grace.
Well, I'm going to ask you to take your Bible to Ephesians chapter 6. We are coming to the end of our series that we have been working through in the book of Ephesians. So what I want to do as we come now to sort of wrap up what he's saying here in this last little section is I want to give you some context. I found it helpful in my own life and in my own ministry coming to a text like this to make sure that I'm constantly reviewing the context behind what Paul is saying. Because every time I go back and review that context, it's like I discover another layer to it, or there's another light bulb that sort of goes off. And so over the weeks that I've been preparing these messages, it's like God has been building layer upon layer a deeper understanding of what exactly is going on in this armor of God that he's been talking about. And so I've tried to do that throughout our series. I've tried to give you the contextual background, and I've tried to bring you into some of that, and I want to do that this morning. And so let me just remind you of a few things that you already know, and I want to put them before you so that we catch the impetus and the impact of what the Apostle Paul is doing in these last three verses in this little section. As you have recalled, and as we've seen together, Ephesians is a book in which the Apostle Paul is disclosing something. He is revealing something that God has kept hidden up to this point. There is a divine mystery that God has now revealed to the Apostle Paul, and the Apostle Paul is making that mystery known. This is not a new thing that God is up to, but it's been a hidden thing. God has been at work on this since Genesis chapter 3. And he has not been telling you everything that he's been doing behind the scenes. He has veiled that. And that's what a biblical mystery is. A biblical mystery, as we saw, is actually a divine secret. It is something that God has been keeping back, even though he's been moving it forward. And so by the time we get to the Ephesian letter, the Apostle Paul has received information from God about that secret. And he is now telling us what that secret is. That secret is a stunning plan that God the Father is accomplishing through the work of God the Son, and it is being applied, it is being secured, it is being preserved and protected by God the Spirit. So whatever this plan is, every member of the Godhead is involved in it. So this is a stunning plan. And so Paul says, let me tell you about the plan. And here's the plan. It has a cosmic scope. This isn't just a plan for you and me. This is not just God saying, look, Sam Horn or Beth Horn or any one of us need redemption. We do need redemption individually, and God is so gracious to give that to us. But the plan is so much bigger than what is going on in our little world and in our little life. This is a cosmic plan. And so Paul says, let me tell you what the plan is. And so he kind of gives it to you in three parts. Part number one is this: God is at work to restore all fallen creation to its former splendor before the curse. This plan that God has been at work accomplishing through Christ and through the ministry of the Spirit, is to restore this broken world that is under the curse to its former glory. And we saw that in Ephesians chapter 1, verses 9 and 10, when we read that God is, through Messiah, going to sum up. He's going to regather. He's going to restore everything on earth. And so the first part of the plan is global. God is on a mission to redeem and restore everything in fallen creation to its former glory. And then Paul says this, it's not just that. That's part number one. The second part of the plan is much bigger. It's universal. It's not just that God is trying to restore the fallen creation, earth, to its former glory. He is trying to put everything right in the universe. He is going to do this not just on the planet. He's going to do this in the cosmos. Everything in the universe, everything in the heavenly realm is going to be restored to the beautiful condition in which it was created and for which it was created before the fall of Satan. So Paul is referencing two big falls, the fall of Satan in heaven and the fall of Satan, the fall of Adam on earth, and he is restoring both realms to their former glory through the ministry of his son Jesus Christ and through the work of the Holy Spirit. This is an amazing plan. And then Paul says, now, just so that you know that God is actually doing this, the first part of that plan is already in play, and that is this: God is redeeming and restoring fallen people, and he is bringing them into this new creation, and he is taking away everything that stands in the way of them having a right relationship with him and living joyfully before him. He is taking everything out of the way that would stand in the way of them having received the full blessings that Paul mentions in chapter 1, verse 3. So here are the three things that Paul's talking about. God is going to restore the earth to its former glory. He's going to restore heaven to its former condition. And he is already restoring a people for his glory who have been made righteous, who have been taken out of those that were near, the Jews, and taken out of those that were far off, and they have been made into one new creation called the church. And he has commissioned those people to live for him. And that's why, beginning in chapter 4 and going through chapter 5, you have these statements about walking. Walk worthy of your calling. Here's how you walk in church, and here's as a church. Here's how you walk when you're out in the pagan world. Here's how you walk in love. Here's how you walk as light. Here's how you walk in wisdom. And the reason that walk is so important is revealed in chapter 6, verse 10. And that is this: because all of those people who have been set free from the kingdom of darkness and have been made light have a mission. They are to take this shalom. That's the word for all of this. I mean, if you want one word to sum all that we've been talking about up, it's the word shalom. It's the idea that God is going to restore everything so that it will be exactly as it should be. Just the way it was in Genesis chapter 1, at the end of every creation day, God looked and God saw, and what he had done was good. And the idea of good there is the idea for shalom. Everything is going to be shalom. And there are now people on this planet who know a little bit of what that is like because you have experienced it. God's champion has come and he has made a peace. And he's extended that peace to you. And you now enjoy that peace with God. And because you enjoy that peace with God, you have that peace with one another. And God has a mission for these people who now live on this broken planet with this new revelation. You are to go everywhere in that kingdom of darkness, and you are to be lights. And as you go into the kingdom of darkness as lights, you are to announce this shalom and to make it available to everybody that is in that kingdom of darkness, because God wants to rescue more people out of that darkness. And for a long time, I thought, you know, maybe what Paul's talking about here is that we have the light. You know, it's like, We walk somewhere, and we go into a dark room and we have a flashlight in our hand, or we have some kind of a lantern in our hand, and we're shining that light so that it dispels the darkness. But that's actually not what Paul's talking about here. He's not saying you have a flashlight in your hand. He's saying you are the flashlight. You are that light. It's not like you've got to go get the light and pick up the light and take it with you. You are yourself the light. You are God's lamp. You are God's light, and he is dispelling you all over the darkness. I mean, think about it for just a moment. If somehow or another we could turn off every light in this room and cover every sort of door and every window in this room would experience, and everybody in this room would experience, pitch darkness. I don't know if you've ever been in a place where all the light has been removed and you hold your hand in front of your face and you can't see anything, and you can almost feel the darkness. Spiritually, that's the picture that Paul is painting here. The world is like that. And all of a sudden, into the room comes a light. And it sits way over in the back. And you look over there, and in that little section, the darkness is dispelled. And then you look around over here, and there's another one that's sitting right over there. And you look, and all of a sudden, around that little area, there's darkness is gone. The function of light is to dispel darkness. Darkness and light cannot coexist, and darkness does not overcome light. And that's just a sort of a little human illustration to explain to you what God is up to. As you now are lights. You're not just holding lights. You yourself are light. You used to be darkness. You are light, Paul says. Now he's sending you out into all of this darkness, and you're to walk. You're to live your life in such a way that people in that darkness are saying, I want that light. Now, as you go into that darkness is not neutral. That darkness is moral. There are very powerful, wicked beings who control all of that darkness and who animate all of that darkness and who are determined to damage the entire universe because of that darkness, and they want people in that darkness. And so when you come as light in that darkness, you become enemy number one. And so Paul says, as you come into that darkness and you do what you've been reading about in Ephesians 1 through 5, you can expect ruthless and relentless opposition all the time in every arena and in every corridor of your life. And it's spiritual opposition. Paul says to the Corinthians, don't think of this as flesh and blood, although maybe flesh and blood people are going to actually be the instrument. The real enemy in all of this is not flesh and blood. It's not human. It is spiritual. There is a spiritual enemy who is coming against you. And Paul has given you two amazing means to go into that darkness and navigate all of that safely. And the first of those is this armor that we have been talking about. The six pieces of this armor that our champion, Jesus Christ, won and wore for us and now has extended to us. But the second thing is this section here, beginning in chapter 6, verse 18, where in addition to the armor, there is also now victory-winning, spirit-enabled praying. And that was certainly practiced by Christ. Don't miss this connection that Paul is making here between the two. He is connecting armor and praying together. In other words, we could say it this way. When you go as light into that darkness and into that hostile terrain, you need protection. You need weaponry. You need something that is going to cut through the darkness, that is going to cut through the spiritual bondage, that is going to release people from all of that bondage. You need a sword. You need a shield. You need a helmet. You need a breastplate. And so all of these pieces of armor were won for us by Jesus Christ, and they were worn by him as he pierced the darkness himself. So we need the armor. But sometimes when we wear the armor, we still suffer defeat because we are missing the other piece. God says you need two things as you stand and withstand the devil. You need this armor and you need this praying. If all you have is the armor, it's not enough. We could say it this way. You can't go into that realm without the armor, but if all you have is the armor, it's not enough. There's something that has to be going on as you wear that armor into that context, and it's praying. Because of the importance and the difficulty of their mission, Paul has already been praying for them two different times in this letter. Paul says, look, I know what you're up to. I know that in the city of Ephesus, you are the center of all of this negative attention. There is ruthless opposition. There is relentless resistance. People are wondering about all the negative things that are happening in the city, and they're attributing them to you because you no longer worship the gods and you no longer follow the Ephesian ways. And so I know the pressure you're under, and I know the temptation that is before you to sort of water down this message. And so I'm praying, and two different times in Ephesians, Paul has prayed for them. In chapter 1, that God would enlighten them so that they would see the truth about what was really going on around them. And in chapter 3, that God would energize them and that he would enable them so that they could live as lights in this darkness under all of that pressure. So Paul says, now I know that you have armor, but I've also been praying for you as you wear that armor. And then he's going to ask them to pray for him because of his own difficult situation. Paul says, just like I've been praying for you, I need you to pray for me. Because just like you have a difficult situation in the kingdom of darkness where you are, I have difficulty in the kingdom of darkness where I am. And by the way, you have difficulty in the kingdom of darkness where you are. And so what Paul is saying here that seems so remote from us is actually immediately accessible to us and inherently important to us. So, at the very success of our mission as Christian soldiers, as warriors for the gospel, we need our armor and we need this kind of praying. And so Paul takes three verses. I mean, nowhere else in this section does he give this amount of space to any one of the pieces of armor. This ought to tell you something about this praying. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to look at four things about the praying, and then I'd like to make an application to us as a church. Here they are. Number one, when you look at this text, you see a strong exhortation to gospel praying. You see a strong exhortation to gospel praying. Look at verse 18. With all prayer and petition, pray at all times in the Spirit, and with this in view, be on the alert with all perseverance and petition for all the saints. I mean, Paul uses very compelling language here. I mean, he devotes the amount of space that we just noted, but he speaks with deep urgency. He speaks with compelling language. He uses what we would call, as you know, if you were a literary person and you were looking at the grammar of this text, he is using imperative language, very strong imperative language. He's looking at you. It's as though he's sitting us down and he's saying, "Now I want you to get this. Don't, as you get ready to go out into battle, as you get ready to head out into that kingdom of darkness, I know what's waiting for you out there. I know the attacks that are coming. I've been under those attacks, and I want you to get this. You need to pray. There must be a commitment on your part to pray, and it's not just sort of the kind of praying maybe we've grown accustomed to in our own Christian worldview. It's the kind of praying that goes along with being alert. It's the kind of praying that goes along when you know that you are about to head into a massive conflict or a massive battle, and you don't know where the enemy is, you don't know what weaponry he has. All you know is that you are walking into a very heated part of the battle, and you need to be alert, and you need to be in constant communication with someone who can help you. I don't know if you've ever watched any footage from World War II where men were being offloaded from boats onto beaches. And then they were just trying to run up those beaches and trying to find any place where they could take cover. And if you've watched any of those kinds of footages, as those men are, particularly the historical ones, as those men are running up those beaches, they are literally being mowed down by the enemy who's up on the hills and up on the cliffs, and they are just mowing those men down. And sometimes as you go into the kingdom of darkness, it feels that way. And you look at those men and they have helmets and they have bulletproof vests and they have weaponry, and it's still, they just get mown down. And it's like, God, I'm going into that kind of warfare. What is going to help? I have this armor, but is it enough? And Paul says, no, it's not enough. You need to know this. This is Paul talking. You need to know this. You need the kind of praying that you pray with all alertness as you move into warfare ground. Remember what we said at the very beginning of the series? Most Christians in our context do not think of life as a spiritual battle. We don't live in a war, in a sort of a warfare mindset. We kind of know that there's this war going on, but it's like super far away, and the missionaries go, and sometimes they get martyred, and so we know that the war is like way, way over there, but we really don't think that we're in it. Life for us is about our house, it's about our car, it's about our kids, it's about our job. Hey, what are we going to get our kids for Christmas? I mean, the stress right now is, man, I ordered it and it's not coming, and Amazon's whatever. And then last week the cloud went out and my little vacuum's not vacuuming like it should. And you know, that's where we're at. And that's where the vast majority of people living in this country are. And Paul says, let me just pull it all up from you. Let me just open your eyes. You are surrounded by a kingdom of darkness. And in that kingdom, there is this massive army of wicked spiritual beings, and they are coming at you. And while you're worried about your little vacuum that didn't work because the cloud went out, and you're trying to figure out, how am I getting my kid a Christmas present because, you know, the supply chain is broken, these enemies are coming in like a horde, and they are determined to defeat you. And the church needs, this is Paul saying, the church needs to wake up. You are, in your context and in your culture, just like the Ephesians. You are in a spiritual battle that is going on every day around you, and you are the object, the target of this incredibly strong, wicked enemy that is determined to knock you down and to knock you out.
Thank you, Pastor Sam. We'll continue this sermon next time on Grow in Grace. Today's speaker, Dr. Sam Horn, is the lead teaching pastor of Palmetto Baptist Church. PBC meets at 2730 Anderson Road, Greenville, South Carolina. Come join our worship service at 9:30 a.m. every Sunday, or connect with us online at pbcpowdersville.org. Grow in Grace is produced by Ryan Ahrens and C.J. Billieu. Thank you for listening. Please join us again next time so together we can grow in grace.